Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Delanon yet lives! What's going on, everybody? It's time for Cannon Fodder. My name is Joe O'Brien.
And I am, let's see what I am this week. I am Troy, WWE Hell in a Cell cage match winner, LaValle. That is very specific, Brent.
That was a long one. That was a long one.
I would never win a Hell in a Cell.
No,
unless
you would
part
not.
Of winning was running away.
Troy, WWE, Hell in a Cell winner, LaValle, can I just say, welcome back to Margarita Cannon Fodder.
I can't believe this is a thing, but I'm glad it is.
Yes, well, as long as the weather's nice. As long as the weather is nice.
Hey, speaking of WWE, Joe, were you ever into wrestling as a kid?
We've gone over this before. Don't ask me this.
I'm surprised. I was a big WWE. Back then, it was WWF. It was a huge mark. I've been to 2 WrestleManias. I've been to like 20-something pay-per-views.
Okay, I have not been to anything live. Let me say this about myself. There's stuff that I'm into and enjoy that I cannot remember anything about whatsoever. So, like, for example, I love baseball. I love the sport of baseball. But Skid, it's mind-boggling to me the facts that he can remember about baseball, about games, about players, about whatever. I don't know even the great players that were on my team, that were on the Phillies, what years they were on there, what years they did this or that. Like, I just don't have – that stuff does not stick for me. So while I watched a lot of WWF when I was a kid and a decent amount of the WCW – WWF era in like the late 90s.
Yeah,
when I was in college.
The Monday Night Wars.
I did not retain any of it. Like, I know Triple H, and I know like Stone Cold Steve Austin, but I don't remember real specifics, especially from the old days, the greats. I don't remember anything.
I was obsessed.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't obsessed.
It's a very, you know, there's a lot of, I think you'll find there's a lot of cross nerdism between wrestling and role playing games.
Really?
You know, they're both very obsessive hobbies, and so I think you find a lot of people like both. Now, I don't watch anymore. My little brother my little brother does indie wrestling on the weekends. He referees, he's in matches and shit. He's still super obsessed with it. But I mean, I remember coming to a point, I think it was senior year in college, where I was like, I've got to stop, because there is 9 hours of wrestling on a week and I feel sick to my stomach if I miss an hour of it.
Oh my God.
Because I feel like I'm missing out on this grand story being told. So I just had to cold turkey stop.
That's how I feel about Pathfinder. But I'm not going to cold turkey stop.
No, it's episode 102. We got to keep going, Joe.
Have you ever taken any of your knowledge or experience of the crazy fictional stories of your wrestling obsession and use them in Pathfinder games? Have you ever stolen like small arcs, story arcs, villain arcs, anything like that
before?
I
will say this. I haven't, but now I'm going to, because that's a great idea.
That's what I'm here for, buddy.
I'm going to have one of my villains steal your valet. No, not Miss Elizabeth.
You're going to have a hill giant throw a chair at Nestor?
Right. Oh, my God. I hit him with a steel chair. That is an improvised weapon. -4 to attack. Oh, my God. Pandemonium.
An improvised thrown weapon. I love it. Oh, you know what, Troy? I think we could officially say we're having fun.
We're having fun. Where's the "We're having fun" t-shirts? I would buy. That's all it needs to say is "We're having fun."
Yep.
And that's a universal evergreen t-shirt.
In Times New Roman.
I'm making that. Guys, you heard it here first. That's our next merch. We're having fun t-shirts. We're having fun, period. Not exclamation point.
Speaking of having fun, I did not tell you this yet. I will tell it to you live on Cannon Fodder. Sorry, guys. This has nothing to do with the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Oh.
But I am actually going to my first fight ever in about a month.
Like a real street fight?
An MMA fight at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, those are fun.
It's June 24th. I'm going to Bellator?
Bellator MMA. I see. I've been to a couple of UFC events. This is like some would say the minor leagues of UFC.
Sure.
But it is. Those guys cross promote all the time.
Yeah.
Doing both.
So, yeah, I'm going to this fight with
it's so much fun.
Somebody's taking me, and I'm
good
nervous.
Seats?
Yeah, it's like 10th row in the first tier or something like that.
You might get bled on.
He said to me, he was like, be prepared, I'm not even joking, to get blood on your clothes.
That's awesome.
That is disgusting is what it is.
It's so much fun. I used to hate MMA because I was like, I can't watch someone's face getting pummeled into egg yolks.
I hate it. I honestly don't like it.
But when you really get into it and start to enjoy the science of like different styles matching up against each other, you can get really into it. I still, though, feel sick when someone is like lights out and they get three more punches to the brain.
Yeah, I'll pass on that.
Well, you're going to see it live, buddy. We can just, I can't look. No.
All right, man, we are recapping and looking behind the scenes of episode 102 of the Glass Cannon Podcast.
What happened in this one?
Well, I'll tell you what happened in this one. First thing that happened is Sir Will, I don't want to say he lets Della live. I want to say there's something happening here with Sir Will that I've been trying to get out there, which is that Sir Will is not in control of himself at the moment. That is the issue. It's not that he is making these decisions to blame Della or be angry at Della. It's that something is controlling him in one way or another. And I don't want that to be an out or an excuse or anything like that.
Sure.
I think you know what my problem is? As a GM, I read Wrath of the Righteous, and that's the problem.
When you start to
know about demons and what demons do, it is really disturbing. And one of the most disturbing things is the lack of self-control. They take it away from you. It's not like you can just decide between good and evil so easily. That is what makes a demon a demon.
Well, I remember in Wrath of the Righteous, demon, devil, doesn't matter. Like, once you go into the world wound, when you come back, you're touched from that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, people are forever changed.
Yeah, they say people are schizophrenic and stuff like that because of the experiences. And it's supposed to be just an example of how brutal and awful war is, like true war, because that world wound is a full-blown war. Which the Giants are building to a war, and we're trying to stop it from coming to that, to a full-blown, you know, thousands upon thousands of on each side war, because it's just hell. It's just pure hell, and one of the things that happens is you feel like you lose this level of self-control, and that's what I wanted to experiment with Sir Will.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to speak in the voice of the listeners. You had a week to think about this. Were you, and be honest, because I don't know the answer. I did not talk to you at all about this. I wanted to just see what happened and then react and have the story happen in real time. How much did you go back and forth making the decision? Because you could have gone either way.
I went back and forth a lot making the decision. I stayed away from Reddit on purpose. I didn't read anything on there because I didn't want to get affected by that at all. Matthew, upon further conversations with me, would not refuse to plan anything, refused to give me his blessing to kill Della, because I asked, I said, if I really did go through it with you, would you be mad personally? Because I don't want to make like an enemy of Matthew.
Sure.
And he was like, you do what you want to do and do not count my feelings in it at all. But
he wasn't passive aggressive about it at all.
He just said, are you prepared for everyone to hate you?
I knew there was something.
And the fact is, I was prepared for everyone to hate me because it's a role that I don't play much. There's a lot of things that I do in the game that people don't like when it comes to forcing other people to play their characters or trying to rush combats along when I think they're over. There are those deficiencies that I have. But one thing that I never am is the heel. Like, I've never played the bad guy.
Right.
Because I'm just not instinctually good at it. I'm always just like, I want to do the good thing. I want to do the right thing. Those are the characters I play. And I thought, like, what if I really tried to do it? But then the reason that I fell the way that I did was not because I wanted to please fans and not because, it is partially because I really do like Della. But it is because I wanted to only just introduce this germ of an idea. Mm-hmm. I thought I just want to show not the tip of the iceberg, but just the root, really.
Sure.
Like something is happening here, and I'm excited to play this idea out because I still don't know where it's going to go. But now I think we all know, but the characters don't.
That's what's so great. They're all behind that wall during that whole thing.
That there's this shakiness to Sir Will right now. And but then we see the amicable exchange of the Pearl of Power and the Dragonfoe amulet, and everything is like hunky-dory. How right. much does Della really believe that? I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think either choice obviously would have been very interesting. And there are people just clamoring over email to go anti-Paladin, but I want to just give it time and still think about it. Nothing is committed to.
If wolves could talk.
And that's the other thing, by the way, in episode 102, we level up. We see a whole new Lexington. But before we get to that, let's talk about the leveling up and the whole, I mean, this is a mind-blowing episode for a lot of reasons. The new mechanics that we have introduced here with using this spike, having a place to rest, having the whole party sort of grouped up there and working and talking with each other about next steps, seeing Skid talk as Nestor and then talk as Pembroke back and forth, and having Sir Will literally start talking to Lork, and then Lork introducing himself to Sir Will. It's a fun way to play. It can, of course, spiral down a rabbit hole a little bit. But I think we're doing a good job of controlling it and giving it a direction and a focus, and that's really what we want. With, I think, the focus being, correct me if I'm wrong, but choose who is leaving this tent, so to speak, this spike magical rock that we're hiding behind, and who like goes out on these sorties, these missions.
Right. Well, the way I explained it to you guys off air is I'm thinking of it in terms of Dragon Age Inquisition rules. So in Dragon Age Inquisition, if you haven't played this game, you pretty much eventually accrue a series of characters that you can get to play. But whenever you go out to do an actual expedition, you can only pick four of them to go out. But you can interchange them any way you want every single time. So I'm thinking in this the same way, is like if Nestor wants to sit one out and you want to bring Pembroke out, go for it. He's got his spell book back now.
Yes.
You are welcome to do that, and Pembroke will earn the XP for that.
Be honest. Did our cannon fodder conversation have anything to do with you giving Pembroke his spell book back right afterwards?
Negative.
So you planned this?
I did.
So you lied to me in cannon fodder.
I would always
you
lie to
you. You son of a bitch!
Put your hands down. You want to throw fists? Yes. No, I...
Hell in a cell.
What I will say is I knew it would be easier to get Pembroke's spell book back to you. And I love the idea that you guys had already found it, but there's no wizards among you.
And we found it in what, in 98?
Eight?
Yeah, think, so cool.
I think that might have been 99, actually, that you found that.
Right.
It was a long episode. I love the idea that you already had it, but it's not like you found a magical sword that you would have recognized as Glum's sword, and then I would have given it away. But that is cool. So now it's like, okay, you want to roll out with Pembroke instead of Nestor? Well, then Pembroke's going to earn the XP, Nestor's going to take back, and then everybody's going to move on different tracks. Dragon Age Inquisition rules.
I don't know. I'm going to put you on the spot here. This is going to be tough. Feel free to take a pass on it.
All right.
Dragon Age Inquisition, you say the rules are you take out four characters, four PCs. In this case, we have five PCs, but already one of them is a random, you know, fifth person that we're all kind of controlling in Umlo.
Umlo.
Would it be possible to leave Umlo back and bring Nestor and Pembroke? Is that an option in your Dragon Age Inquisition idea?
Good question. Thank you for asking.
He's going to pass.
No, right now the sort of, I hate to say rule, but sort of the conceit that we're going with is that Umlo is always the fifth.
Okay.
You know, and if something happens to Umlo, then we're going back to the original four. And you know what, Joe? Great little segue, because I think this is a perfect time to talk about Umlo. I had an idea early on that this wasn't going to be a heavy combat.
Umlo leveled up too.
Umlo leveled up as well.
Very exciting.
Finally. You know, we were arbitrarily, because of my decision, waiting for him to like confirm a crit with Heartspit. Crit with hot spit,
but it's so hard.
But it's so hard for that to happen.
He doesn't have a threat range. It's only a natural 20 that does it.
And so I just decided actually recently that once you guys leveled up, I was going to level him up as well, and now he is going to permanently stay one level behind you guys, because that really just helps me balance the game just from a technical standpoint. Having five guys all ninth level is a lot. So this Dragon Age Inquisition rules is going to be four plus Umlo, and Umlo is always going to be one level behind the main party. But as you can see, Pembroke, Lork, they're seventh level still, right. So they're way behind. But, you know, you get Pembroke into the fray. We've talked about this before. With higher level characters, he's going to level up
quickly,
faster.
Yeah.
They're all going to be leveling up on their own track. But anyways, speaking of Umlo, we kind of glanced over it. I went around the room, and then, as usual, everyone forgets about poor Umlo. We didn't really level him up. And so I talked to you and Skid, trying to decide what he should take as a class. And my initial thought was that he would go Paladin. He's been hanging out with Sir Will, almost squiring Sir Will ever since you guys left the tomb of Nargum Steelhand.
I don't know if you said this on air, but you've been saying this for a while. That you were like, well, Umlo's been working with Sir Will, so I imagine he'll take Paladin as his next level.
Yeah, I had that feeling from the minute he was helping you into Uskroth's armor. I was like, this is who he identifies
with.
He could
become this religious warrior.
His sister has passed, and for some reason, out of everyone, he's chosen. Well, it's pretty obvious he didn't go with Baron, but he went to Sir Will. There was something about Sir Will. Let's go Paladin. Well, now he levels up, and so much has changed since Steelhand's tomb.
Yeah.
He can't go Paladin. So I talked it out, and it was actually Skid who said to me, I think he should go Barbarian. Because, with his charisma now at a whopping 6, and this hand that's compelling him to do things.
It makes a lot of sense,
that he doesn't want to do. There is this rage within him from his sister's death. I mean, you could not...
Getting dragged out of the life that he knew, the simple life that he wanted as a cook, and thrown into this mix, and it's... You could totally see it.
The way Grant played him a few episodes ago when Nestor took that potion of restoration right from him, he's like, you're gonna trash! And he really flipped. Like, you see that this rage is building within him. So to me, Barbarian is perfect. So, cannon fodder first, Joe. We are gonna level up Umlo on air right
nice!
Now. I knew pretty early on, I was saying this before, that this wasn't going to be a combat episode, so I wasn't too concerned about making sure Umlo's stats were perfect. So let's do it right now. So we're going to go Barbarian.
What do you get at first level Barbarian? I've never played a Barbarian.
Do we give him an archetype? I was looking at some archetypes, and the thing about the Barbarian archetypes, a lot of them are like blah, 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 totem. And that means like they came from a clan of barbarians, like they were a wandering group of nomads, and their father was a barbarian, their grandfather was a barbarian, and they have this long history of being these wandering ragers. It doesn't seem right for Umlo. He is like a fly by night barbarian. It's the rage within him that has given him this power. So I kind of just want to go standard with him.
I'm down with that.
If he didn't have Nargrim Steelhand, I would consider Titan Mauler, because Titan Mauler is pretty fucking cool for Giant Slayer.
What is it?
Gives you like a +1 to AC and attack against all creatures one subtype larger than you.
You mean one or more?
One or more, or just one, I'm not sure. But I mean, it's like, you're a giant fighter.
Yeah.
But then by third level...
You're a Titan Mauler.
Right. By third level, it allows you to use large weapons, but at a greater penalty. He already gets to use large weapons with Nargrim's Steel Hand at no penalty.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to take him down that track. It may end up in later levels being really cool.
No, I think he just
needs... Barbarian.
Yeah. So what do you get at first level Barbarian?
Let's start at the beginning. I'm sorry, Joe. I'm not going to let you just stampede towards his powers. We got to roll hit points for Umlo.
I'm rolling hit points for Umlo?
That's what that D12 is in front of me that you kept asking about.
He's sliding over a D12 to me.
All right, so it's a D12. I'll roll and you roll, and we'll give Umlo the better.
Poor Umlo.
This could end up really bad. I regret choosing to do this.
All right, here we go.
All right, come on, Ums. Oh, awesome.
8.
11.
All right, we did all right.
Hey, that's great.
11 is amazing.
Now, it's not his favorite class. His favorite class is Fighter. By the way, Umlo is a Rogue 2, Fighter 1, 2, 3, Fighter 5, Barbarian 1.
This is wild.
He is a phenomenal character.
We never roll sneak attack damage for him. I don't think we ever remember that. He has 1d6 if somebody's flat-footed or if he's flanking. I feel like we forget that.
We probably do.
Yeah,
I mean,
we got to remember that.
I'll show you his list of powers. Between the rogue, the fighter abilities, and now the barbarian abilities, it's going to be a list a mile long of things he can do. Joe, we also have to choose his ability point.
I was just going to say that.
He at level 4, and this came straight out of the book, he had a +1 to strength. Now, poor Umlo, because of this...
Ability drain.
He's got a -2 to charisma, -4 to strength and con. So his strength is a 14, dex is 14, con 10, intelligence 13, wisdom 10, charisma 6. Giving 1 point to anything, only intelligence is actually going to make a difference now.
Yeah.
So what do we build him towards? I think we should build him towards con. It's not going to do anything right now, making him an 11 con, which actually should be a 15. But then next time he can take 16 con. We could obviously... Min-max and put it into strength.
What I would think? I would say con or strength. Just as, I mean, if you're taking a barbarian level, I think that he's increasing either in his con or in his strength. And either one, I mean, we need to get to a point sometime soon when he gets that stuff healed. So right. It's not totally pointless, but yeah, I would say either one. Do you want to roll for it?
Sure. I mean, I'm leaning towards con. If he gets healed right now, he would have 18 strength, 14 con. If we give this to him to con, he will have 15 con. If we give it to him to strength, he'll have 19 strength. But you want strength, I want con.
Roll off.
It's a roll off.
A D12 roll off. 10.
5.
Oh, it goes to strength!
All right,
Yes!
All right, the dice have chosen you to be
I
min-max.
Love it. He's a glass cannon.
He really is. All right, now you want to talk powers. So, as a pure barbarian, this character, I want to play. Maybe I'll start playing Umlo again. I'm just going to print out, like, Skid used to do this for his barbarian in our Jade Regent game. He had one sheet back when we were using PC Gen before we grew up. He had one sheet that was regular EK. That's the name of his character. And they had one sheet that was all in red for what EK was like when he was raging.
Because it was so different.
It was so vastly different. All right, so at first level, he gets fast movement, which unfortunately he doesn't get. It's a plus 10 feet to movement speed unless heavily loaded or in heavy armor. Right now, he's actually using the plus 2 breastplate right now. Remember, he took off the giant nail scale mail? But those are both heavy armor.
They're medium armor. I thought. No?
I think the breastplate is heavy armor.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think I could be wrong.
I think I could be wrong.
I could be wrong. Well.
You are wrong. If it is a breastplate, that's medium armor.
You're right, Joe. You're right. So
he's going to get increased movement?
Right. So now, well, this is awesome. I'm glad I was wrong. Poor Ums has gotten such the short end of the stick since day one.
Scale mail is also medium. So
all right, so he can
back,
wear either of those,
yeah.
And now his speed is 30. I mean, dwarves already have what's
speed
called
is 30. That's
slow
awesome.
And steady. Your base speed is never modified by armor or encumbrance. Encumbrance is great because he's actually carrying a medium load, but he's been, you know, hampered at 20 feet. Now he's got 30 feet of movement. That is huge, especially when he attacks from 15 feet away.
That is so huge. You have
very,
no idea.
Very big. And then the other power he gets, kind of important.
The rage.
Raging.
So he gets 4 per day. And I mean,
4 rounds.
You know what's
day.
Kind of amazing?
4 rounds.
Yeah, 4 per rounds day. Per day. Do you know what rage does for him? It basically cures him of his
ailment. Plus 4 strength, plus 4 con.
So it's just going to make him normal Umlo. Plus 4 strength, plus 4 con, plus 2 to will saves, minus 2 to AC. So that's going to be a little.
Because his AC has been so high
before.
His
AC's not great. But man, if Umlo can get healed. So right now, when he rages, he will have a 19 strength and a 14 con. When he gets healed, he'll have an 18 con and a 23 strength. He immediately becomes the best character in the group.
That is awesome. So I love it.
That's what he's going to get right now. And then next level, he will get uncanny dodge. So that's kind of cool. Let's pick out skills. He's got 5 different skills. What do you want Umlo to be good at? Perception, profession cook? Has he been the cook while you guys were traveling?
If you want to balance out the min-maxing, you could give him a point in profession cook.
Hey, let's go back and forth. I'm going to give, we can do 5. I'm going to give him 1 point in stealth. He's already at a 9 for stealth. So I'm going
to good.
So I'm going to
have
him.
You know what? We should have him stealthing more. I didn't realize
that. Now he's got a plus 10 to stealth.
Because he's a rogue.
He also has a plus 7 to acrobatics. But it's your turn.
Profession cook.
Oh, okay. So you want
to do it.
All right.
Look, man, we're behind enemy lines. If there's any way you can ever think of a way as a GM to use his profession cook role to say he's able to make something that is going to say, if he rolls a DC 20 cook profession cook check, he'll be able to make a meal that gives you plus 1 to perception for 24 hours or whatever.
Well,
you know, those food bonuses for like we know from video games.
This is another reason it would be great to have like someone else just focused on Umlo, because if he had rolled profession cook on those mincemeat pies, I would have given you some information there like
that's on us. We need to remember that.
I didn't want to blame you.
Anyway,
guys, right.
It's your skill.
All right, so I can go. All right, so he's got a plus 7 to acrobatics, bluff, and disable the vice.
Well, we don't really need disabled device.
Yeah, we got Nestor. And Bluff, you know, he does get a, he has a feint maneuver that gives him a little buff to his feint, but we never feint. I'm going to give it to acrobatics because his whole thing is like getting in and out of danger with this long reach weapon. So getting that bonus to acrobatics is going to help him avoid attacks of opportunity. So you
great.
Got, we got two left.
I feel like I want to give him...
And you can ask me, like, what's his escape artist? And I'll tell you, -1. So
I feel like I want to give him a knowledge that nobody else in the party has.
And just
and, like, make this a reveal as, like, part of a backstory.
He has no knowledge right now. So here are your options. Arcana, Dungeoneering, Engineering, Geography, History, Local, Nature, Nobility, Planes, Religion, or Other.
Yeah, we pretty
knowledge,
much...
Knowledge, Shellfish.
We pretty much have those... covered. So I would, I mean, obviously engineering with a dwarf.
I'll tell you right now, the things he'll get bonuses to, his intelligence bonus, are Dungeoneering, Engineering, Local, and Nature.
Let's do knowledge local. He's starting to get a little bit more, I know Nestor has a high knowledge local, but I don't think the rest of us really do. And he's starting to get more familiar with the area, especially more familiar with fighting humanoids.
Yeah.
And I think that that will factor in. So in the interest of, I mean, he's just not the type to be very skillful
right.
at a lot of different things. But I think that this shows he's learning.
Those two levels of rogue definitely make him like have the ability to go skill monkey if he wanted to. But I like the idea of knowledge. People think knowledge local is like, oh, where's the nearest bar in town? Knowledge local is an obsession with humanoids
right.
as well. And so that's all he's been fighting for the most part. Now he went from nothing to a +5 in knowledge local.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really cool.
That is really cool.
So rather than go min-max with him, I'll put his last one into something just...
Swim.
Yep. I'm going to put it into swim.
Well, he's got some good strength.
He has a -1 in swim, and now he has a +3 in swim.
It might save his life.
It
what if we looked back on Cannon Fodder 48 and said, that's the day we saved Umlo's life?
Do you guys remember back in Cannon Fodder 48 when we saved Umlo's life because he took some swimming lessons from Lexington? Him and Lexington just run into the river. It's like, teach me how to swim, Lexington. All right, so that is what we're rolling with. So a fully healed Umlo still sits at only 57 hit points because of that -4 to con. AC 20 if he's wearing the breastplate.
Oh, he survived so far.
AC 19 if he's wearing the giant snail scale mail. But I mean, he's still doing heart spit +10/+5 for 2d6 +4 damage +2d6 against giants. And now let's just see what happens when he rages. When he rages, his AC drops to 18. But then he's +12/+7 to attack with heart spit.
2d6.
2d6 plus 7 +2d6 against giants.
Okay, nice. Little by little.
Little by little, we're making...
Well, we have to get him healed.
We have to get him healed. But I'm excited about this. Did you know this? He has an archetype for a fighter. He's a freehand fighter.
I did not know that.
Yep. Don't know what it is, but...
we'll have to look that up.
It's pretty cool. All right, this has been Leveling Up Umlo.
This has been Umlo time. Let's get back to episode 102.
I really just want to talk Umlo, but okay.
You know, there isn't a whole lot more to talk about. I mean, there's a lot of interaction in this episode, a lot of role play, which I love, and we don't really need to go into too much detail on
it. It speaks for itself.
It does speak for itself, but it does have that element that I love of debate, of the play. We haven't had something, I don't think, like this since... Before the Spire Drake. Is it the Spire Drake fight that was in the cave where Sir Big Willie style?
Big Willie style. That's when everybody was probably at their most cohesive.
Yeah, but I think it's been that long since we've had debate about where do we go, what do we do next.
Yes.
And this was a fun aspect of this episode because we had, two or three different clear directions that we could choose. Mm-hmm. And imagining everyone sitting in this hiding place debating exactly where to go next was really fun. And then to have you break it up with... the bear and the stone giants on patrol. I mean, my heart was pounding. I thought that was so fun because it isn't just, obviously it's going to be tough to fight a bear and two stone giants, but even if we were able to mop it up with them with some serious damage, that's still, we're alerting now more people because they were a patrol. If the patrol then gets knocked out, they know where to find us and we have to move again. So there was a lot on the line there. I was glad that we were able to sneak by that. And I just loved Lork, like kind of waking up to it and waking Baron up. And the two of them just being like, be quiet, be quiet. I enjoyed it. And then planning how to go out from there, I thoroughly enjoyed too. And we end up with this just enormous area. This giant, literally capital G giant cafeteria.
It is. I mean, we can't overstate
exactly.
The size.
We are looking at the actual map from Paizo now because we're playing on Roll 20, which we actually didn't talk about.
Yeah,
at
we
all
should have talked about
the
that
last
last
couple
week.
Weeks. It is.
I was very nervous about it, Joe.
It's been great.
I think it's been phenomenal.
And one of the main things, we've talked about this before, using Roll 20 just in an in-person session, because the maps are so much richer. They're so much more vibrant than hand-drawn maps. You're still in person. It does take away that element, that very
tactile.
Tactile is the word I was looking for, element of grabbing your mini, putting your mini in combat. That stuff is really fun and hard to replace. But using Roll 20 in this case, it's mind-blowing, you guys, to see the size of these tables in this room compared to Sir Will. You could fit 50 Sir Willamettes on one table.
It says in the flavor text, it's the size of life rafts.
It's incredible.
That's another reason I wanted to do it. It's like, not only was it impossible at this point for me to draw this all out because I don't have maps that size or a table big enough to fit this, I wanted to impress upon you guys the scope of this place. You are in a place where only giants have ever tread. And I'm really excited to see next week because this changes everything in terms of how you do combat. Those tables are going to provide cover depending
on
how far away you are. The room goes on forever, and all you know is there's 5 creatures in the room, but you haven't looked at all those alcoves. You don't know what else is going on. It's going to be awesome, and I love that we get to start an episode. Boom. Combat.
Let me just ask you, are you looking forward to episode 103? You personally?
I look forward to it every week, Joe, because I don't have a lot going on.
Well said, my friend. Well said. Well, speaking of Giant Slayer, why don't we talk a little listener mail?
How are those two things related?
No idea. Never said I was good at improv.
Giant-sized listener mail.
Cue that for kidding.
Actually, I'm showing it to you as a printout.
Ooh, that's a big one.
A giant-sized listener mail.
What's the subject say? Love you guys.
The subject says love you guys. Love in all caps.
Well,
This comes from Jen in San Francisco and Oakland.
Ooh, a lady.
And she says, yes, I'm in both places. So how do you make that happen, Jen? You must be busy with work in both cities, I guess. I don't know. That is neither here nor there.
I think we should just discuss that.
Let's just
that
our
is
theories
very confusing.
On how Jen is living in both San Francisco and Oakland at the same time. This is a very long email, most of which is shout outs to us. It's a very nice email, and we really appreciate it, Jen. Thank
you so much.
Just skim
to the parts where she says how cool I am.
Right.
Get those out on air.
She says, Troy, I just wish that I never play with a DM like you.
Is that a quote?
No, I made it up.
You're a mean spirited man.
No, she says, not only are you incredibly descriptive in your narratives, you're also probably the funniest person I've listened to in a long time.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a serious compliment.
I like that. Hey, can you talk to the rest of the world? Because I really need a career.
I thought you were going to say, can you talk to the rest of the players on this podcast?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
We think you're nothing but a pain in the ass.
I sit there and fake laugh at your jokes. Grant. Matthew. This kid's always funny.
Jen, thank you so much for the email. Let's go through the question. Really what I want to focus on are two questions. The first one could be a long story. Let's not get too far into it. Any advice? She's brand new. She's going to join a PFS, hopefully this month.
Good girl.
She says, hopefully this May, and dive into the RPG world. She has no acting background.
Okay.
Except for my job, in which I have to exude a tremendous amount of confidence and attempt to mirror other people's personality, which I don't really understand what that is.
She a mime? I thought you said no performance background.
She said, but I've never played D&D or Pathfinder, and I find the whole process very intimidating. Jen, first of all, you're not alone. But here's the question. Any advice on the role-playing aspect of the game? Should I practice developing an accent of some kind or that is not offensive? We've talked about this before. We've generally said when you're starting out, if you're a little nervous about it, you don't need to have an accent. You don't need to act in character. You can be descriptive about what your character does. The main focus I think you want to have for role-playing is trying to think not like you.
Yeah.
is trying to think, what would someone else do, not me, someone who has this alignment or someone who has these physical abilities or someone who has these traits or these feats. That is also not easy, but working on thinking like your character is, I think, the first step. As far as accents go, I would not be intimidated to do accents at a PFS, a brand new PFS. It is, chances are, I don't know you, Jen, but odds are you're not going to be great at it. Odds are it's going to be hard. I don't consider myself to be good at accents. It's something that I didn't do before the Glass Cannon podcast. I never did before Lork because I was always kind of embarrassed. And now after Lork and after playing for years with Skid and these guys, I've come to the realization that you just have to not care what your accent sounds like. I think it goes to show that you're trying to envelop this character. And as long as you're trying, any GM or any other player should be happy that you're putting that effort in for their immersion.
And at the same time, don't be afraid to just use your normal voice until you feel
comfortable.
Well,
that's what you do most of the time.
Yeah, a lot of time, especially with my NPCs. But when I started playing, when Joe got me back into role-playing games 6-7 years ago, my character was basically an exaggerated version of myself.
Right.
You know, and so I just used my voice. Don't be afraid to do that, whether you're talking in character or describing what the character would say. So my character basically says that, you know, she thinks that she should, you know, do this, but she's willing to do this. That's totally fine too. You'll find that as you get more comfortable in that group, that you're going to be more comfortable, you know,
putting yourself out there.
If you've never had any acting experience, you know, there's a lot of crossover, I think, between people who are in the performance arts and people who play role playing games. Yeah. It's sort of a natural,
and people who wanted to be or were trying that career and it didn't really pan out, or they didn't have a lot of success, and they end up doing role-playing stuff.
Yeah.
Playing Pathfinder.
It scratches that itch.
Right. It's like karaoke for musical theater people that aren't on Broadway.
That's exactly what it's like,
Jeff. Yeah. You have this outlet for this itch that you have. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that do that. If you don't have that specific background or that talent, that is not a good reason to not try. You should never be intimidated by what people think about you around a table in a Pathfinder game. As long as you're not being a jerk to anyone else, and you're not driving your opinions into everyone else's character, you're going to have a great time, and everybody's going to be happy you're there, no matter what you're doing in terms of acting ability. That should be the least of your concern. It's a very inclusive environment. Everybody is there to have fun, and they all know that we're going to be a little silly sometimes. We're role-playing. That's the whole idea.
And honestly, watch some of the famous shows out there where people are role-playing and stuff. A lot of times, guys are all doing that same Monty Python-esque voice.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like the go-to voice. Well, good morrow, friends. I would like to...
Lovely.
Whether they're playing a rogue, a paladin, a fighter, it doesn't matter. Everyone just kind of goes into that nerd Monty Python and the Holy Grail voice.
Right, every barbarian talks like this.
Right, there are standard voices for every character class out there. So you don't have to go crazy worrying about the voice. It will come. The more you play, the more comfortable you'll be, you know, immersing yourself in it.
Right, and I don't want to go too far into this because it can get very complicated. Let's think about it simply. The more you play, the more comfortable you're going to get. There is no rule. There is no right way to play. There is no thing you have to do at the table for a new PFS. Just do what you're comfortable with, and I'm just letting you know that you can try new things from time to time that might embarrass you a little. It's a safe environment to do that generally, a PFS game. Would you not agree, Troy?
I would agree that the gaming table should always be a safe environment to try and explore any part of yourself.
There you go.
So, you know, that's why we always tell people, play more games. If you're listening to the show because you like a great story, awesome. I love that we have people that don't play this game that listen to us. But if you're looking for something fun and you're looking for something where any walk of life can do it, play role-playing games.
All right, I'm going to get to her mechanical question now, which is something I wanted to talk about, honestly, with you from a gamer standpoint. Also, she says, I'm having difficulty understanding professions and the downtime mechanics of the game. Where can I read up on more on what an herbalist, for example, does? I've already bought the core rulebook. Is it worthwhile to be an innkeeper or a gardener when you're doing one-offs or adventure paths in which you are mostly away from the main town? How do these professions factor into a game like that? Troy, your thoughts on the profession skill in general and then maybe some downtime mechanics.
Well, now I know why Umlo took profession cook.
Exactly. See, I was foreshadowing this question.
That was good, Joe. Profession is one of those skills similar to a praise that you can take or leave. You know what I mean? Like, I like the idea of giving, when I first create a character, putting one point into a profession, that he had a life before this adventure. Now, maybe that's going to come in handy, you know, as the adventure continues. When we started book two of Giant Slayer, I said to everybody, you're going to be on a boat for a while. I think you guys should all invest a skill in a profession that will, you know, be connected.
Be relevant.
Be relevant to being on a boat.
And this is where we get Baron's profession, fisherman.
Which, now look, it's still a joke.
It's still, it's
a thousand episodes later. And, you know, I wasn't forcing it on them. I said, you don't have to take it, but it's going to be fun if you do. There's certain things you can use. But the profession skill is also meant to just earn money during downtime. Giant Slayer is not built. There is no downtime.
Yeah, let me interrupt you there with the actual mechanics. If you're asking about the mechanics of the profession skill, it is that once per week you can roll your profession skill check and earn half of your roll die result in gold in that profession. Of course, that also assumes that you're able to do that profession during that week, in which case, in Giant Slayer, none of us could do our jobs. We are constantly on the road adventuring.
Right, like Baron couldn't have fished in the stream, got to the gates of Minderhall's Valley, and been like, Ettins, before you attack, you guys want to buy some trout?
Fresh fish, please. I've got fresh fish here.
Like, yeah, it's not exact, but it also has the mechanical use that you can also answer questions about your profession. Basic questions are DC 10. More complex questions are DC 15 or higher. So let's look directly at your question about an herbalist, for example. What does an herbalist do? I think you might be able to find out more about that from something like Ultimate Campaign. I don't know 100% that it's in there, but Ultimate Campaign is a great book that Paizo puts out that really examines downtime and character backstory. It is a great way. I mean, it has so many details to it, not only with what you can do when you're between combats and such, but it also has elements that generate, that help you to generate character backstories. This is right from the guide, including a new system for random character generation, traits and drawbacks that meld your backstory into your statistics. Story feats.
That's cool. That sounds like Shadowrun.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Story feats that increase in power as you achieve goals. You make quests for your character that are personal quests, and they can increase. Your feat powers can increase. Complete downtime rules that flesh out the parts of PCs in the life that takes place between adventures, such as running a business, gaining power, influencing a community, starting a magical academy. These kind of things are, we've never really delved into this stuff, but I would be very interested to, and this is a book that could give you some hints on that. But besides that, the question of what can you use your herbalist profession for if you are out of town adventuring all the time? For my money, as a GM, it's up to your GM. Mm-hmm. But as a GM, I would allow a profession herbalist check in place of almost any
knowledge nature,
craft alchemy check.
Oh, craft alchemy.
I would say if you have profession, if a player came to me and said, I have profession alchemy or profession herbalist, could I roll to see like what this poison may have come from or what this root can be used to do or whatever? If you come upon an alchemy lab and you're trying to figure out what they're making, that is, I think, a good use of professional herbalist that isn't just making money. Would you agree?
Sure. And, you know, one thing that we don't do in our games, and we haven't played Curse in a while, but I know that the sorcerer in the group is really interested in using components and tracking components.
Yes.
You do this in Jade to a certain extent. A lot of times components are very minor, but I like the idea of playing where you have to have the components of that spell. So if you have an herbalist in your group, I would make, if you're the GM and you know that someone is interested in profession herbalist, I would kind of impress upon your spellcasters in that group to like track their components, because now this herbalist can go out when you guys camp for the night and find them things. Roll profession herbalist. Ooh, a six. you know what? You're not going to be able to cast invisibility tomorrow because your herbalist wasn't able to find the component you needed. So you need to wait till you get to a new town
right.
to buy that stuff. It so, changes the game tremendously.
It does. Like that. And in the long run, to answer your question from a more general perspective, this is a conversation that you would have to have with your GM.
Right.
I would say that profession herbalist in general, this is kind of scary to say, but it might not play in that well with a PFS character, with one-offs, with GMs that you don't know. Honestly, it's probably not going to be a very valuable skill point, but if you want it as an important part of your character's backstory and you want to use it in PFS to say, this is what I did between adventures to earn gold, that's a good idea and it's totally legitimate, but you are at the mercy of your GM to determine how your profession herbalist check will be valuable outside of earning money.
Right.
For knowledge checks and things like that. So, but if you're doing a long-term campaign and you're working with a GM, I would absolutely say, how can I
use...
Yeah, I would say, how can I... Actually, in my curse campaign, because we never really focused on professions much, I required that everybody had to have a point in a profession skill.
Yeah.
Because you are in a city, you live in a city, you've grown up in a city, and at this stage of your life where you're old enough to really go out adventuring, you must have had some way to contribute to society. So what was that way? And then I use it as a passing of time. I'll say everybody roll a profession check, and that helps to advance the background elements of the story by letting time pass, because it's not like this day, major combat, next day, major combat, next day, major combat. When there can be gaps of 4 or 5 days in between, it makes those combats feel more realistic because it's like, oh, for 5 days, nothing happened in the city. And then there was an uprising of some sort or whatever. You have this, I think it's more, gets you into the fantasy a little more.
Oh, for sure. And mechanically, it really works for your idea because you have 10 people in this campaign.
Right.
But not everyone can show up to every session. You only allow a maximum of a certain amount of players. So if you can't show up for the session where everybody gained 300 gold each and all this stuff, at least you can like earn a little bit of that gold back. You're not going to get any XP, but it just keeps you active in the campaign.
And it explains very easily what your character was doing when they weren't there.
Right.
When they weren't able to be part of the adventure, what were they doing? Oh, well, they had to do guard duty on a caravan that spent a week going to Magnamar and then coming back.
This inn's not going to run itself.
Exactly. Those tables aren't going to bust themselves. I think it's a great mechanic to use, and I'm really glad that we're utilizing it more now as more experienced gamers, because we never used it before.
No.
But I think it's a good idea to use going forward, and I would encourage GMs to utilize it a little bit more just to deepen your world with your players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all I got, buddy. You got anything else?
I think we should have a full-on WWE wrestling match right now between Umlo and Lork.
Oh, come on.
Let's put out the battle map.
That's
and it's a 7th-level Umlo against an 8th-level... an 8th-level Umlo who's got all that drain against a 7th-level Lork. I'll give you your feedback, and we'll just play on my table right now after we finish recording.
Awesome. Now I'm in.
All right.
Get out the dice.
I rolled a 24 initiative.
I rolled a 4.
Lork's gonna lork!
Let's go.